Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is Diane Schwarz. Diane is the Chief Digital and Information Officer of Hunt Consolidated, a private company with over $3 billion in revenue focused on exploring, developing, and refining oil and gas. In that role, Diane oversees global teams to lead digital transformations, maintain cybersecurity, enable data analytics, and enhance infrastructure and cloud operations, among other tasks. Prior to Hunt Consolidated, Diane was the Chief Information Officer of Textron. In this episode, she describes her methodology for transitioning into new executive roles, including the need for extensive planning, learning the business and its stakeholders, and getting to know the company's suppliers. Diane emphasizes the importance of understanding company culture to successfully rally support for changes to foundational pieces of IT, which she did at Unconsolidated after a careful investigation and planning. We also discuss the agile skills required for employees working in technology today, her journey to her leadership role as a woman in a male-dominated field, the future of women in STEM, and a variety of other topics. Well, Diane Schwarz, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you again.
Great. Happy to have you here in my office today, Peter.
Thank you so much. Diane, you have been the Chief Information Officer of Hunt Consolidated now for about 8 months as we sit here. A transition for you. Last time we spoke, you were at Textron. Very different industry, different structure. And I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind taking us back, say, 9 or 10 months when you learned about the opportunity, prepared for the opportunity. What were some of the things you did in transition to prepare yourself to a new company and a new industry for you?
Sure. Let me also add that as Chief Digital and Information Officer, is expanded scope as well. So there's one book that I always use for a transition and recommend to everyone, Your First 100 Days in a New Executive Job, by Robert Hargrove. It's always been my Bible when I do a transition. And one of the things that I learned from this book the first time I did a transition is that you need to begin it at least 30 days before you hit the ground running. So often you wait until day one to begin that transition. So the first thing I did when I accepted the job offer was pull it out and start to put together my plan. Who is the competition? Are there reports that I can read, you know, searching through. Normally, I'll go and search on the SEC for 10Ks. That was hard because now I'm working for a privately held, family held company. I didn't have as much research that I could do about the particular company. And certainly crawling through LinkedIn and looking at bios and just kind of any contextual information that I could get that I didn't already get during the interview process. I will tell you here, the interview process was a great way for ramping up because I was exposed to so many of who are now my peers as they went through the vetting process. So I felt that I knew the team really well before I hit the ground running. So that was helpful. My boss, one of the CEOs, we have co-CEOs here, he actually wanted me to back off on the prep. And he said, you need a mental break between one role to the next role. Just, you're going to hit the ground running and you're going to be working so hard. Don't start too early. You make sure to take a vacation and come here really refreshed. So I did that too. I took a fantastic vacation to get started.
That's great.
But the premise of the book is, your first 30 days, focus on the business, meet with the stakeholders, learn the business. What are the business priorities? Don't worry about IT. And there's a recommendation actually that says, if somebody is still running it, ask them to still run it for you. And so there was somebody who's still here who is in an interim capacity. And she and I had the agreement that she was going to still keep her hands in the cookie jar and wasn't just going to turn it over on day one so I could focus on the stakeholders. The next 30 days, focus on your team. Meeting with as many of them individually as I could. And then the third 30 days is really focusing on your suppliers. it's hard to chunk it out that way, and it never happens in those 30 days. But adding on top of that, that this is a global role, so getting out into the field. So, yes, I now own steel-toed boots. This weekend, I had to acquire fire-retardant clothing because I'm going out to a couple of our sites that require that, and I'll be out of the country. So I didn't realize they made fire-retardant clothing for women. I now have it. But it's sending a signal to the business demonstrating that I care how we run the business. And I can't really bring the right digital and technology tools until I understand that. So it has been a whirlwind meeting so many people, listening to their stories, and seeing all of our sites. Mm-hmm. So that's the 50,000 foot level, even though it took 5 minutes to get there.
No, that's great. A great overview. And I wonder if there are aspects of what you can share about what you learned in your listening tour and getting to know the business. You're evaluation of the people, and as well as your evaluation of your partners outside of the firm. What were some of the conclusions you drew in those 90 days?
So I like to manage the team in sound bites because it gives people something to rally around. So the first was advance the business units, right? IT isn't here for IT. IT is here to enable the business. So really organizing my teams and defining responsibilities and assigning business partners to know, so that the business units know who to contact. We have a really complex structure and broad global reach, so people really didn't know who to talk to. So that was one of the responses to what I learned. How do I get IT services? Who do I talk to? How do we move forward? The other was, I call it a Power One Hunt. So because we have this kind of spread, people didn't have natural ways to collaborate together. Even navigating certain things like an employee directory or the telephone system, it wasn't all natural. So I come in as a new employee, and what I do, I pull up the global address list and Outlook, and go, why isn't everybody in here? So those were some easy things to piece together. Protect Hunt. Everyone, of course, is always concerned about cybersecurity. Are we doing the right things? Do we have a plan? So there's anxiety in the network from not knowing. So working with my security team, understanding what it is, and putting together messaging to say, here's what our plan is, but also here's where we're at, and here's where we're well protected. And then the last is make IT simple. It's not intuitive for most of our users, right? How often do you go, you know, home to Aunt Becky's on Thanksgiving and here, can you fix my printer or download this app for me? Our users are the same way. And so that was something else that I heard all over the organization was, I really don't know how to use this tool. And is it the right one? And is it modern? So I haven't been able to really respond so much to the digital side in the first 6 months of the transition because there was some of the core foundational pieces I needed to rally the team around. But now that I have built some credibility with the organization and the IT brand has been restored in some respects, now we can work on digital and have even more exciting conversations. So now when I revisit with all of those stakeholders, we're having much different conversations than we were in the first couple of visits. It's really thinking about, what do I need to do with the business? Or I'm hearing what our competitors are doing, or how do we work together on this or have this business problem? So now it's going to be crafting that whole next message, which, all right, that's the cool part. That's really why as a chief digital officer, you're here. But my husband always tells me, he said, you have a lot of I to get to before you can get to the D.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Yeah. I want to talk to you a bit about the significance of the D. So there are a number of CIOs who also have the digital responsibilities, and you've been a CIO before, as aforementioned. What's as you think about the purview of digital, generally speaking, and of course within the specifics of this business,
How do you define that? And I'd be also interested in your perspectives on the internal or operational aspects of digital versus, say, the customer-facing aspects of digital.
I don't have a succinct soundbite mm-hmm. to define it. Everyone has their own definition of it. And I really think it's an endorsement by our senior leadership, our CEOs, that technology should be or is pervasive in the business, and it needs leadership and guidance to bring that together, even though there are areas where people are responsible for specific pieces of technology, and that's okay. But who's looking at the overall architecture, governance, trajectory, possibilities for the business as a whole, as opposed to in pockets? So I think it really just gives me the right. So I've got the calling card to go poke my nose in everywhere where I think I should be doing so. So we do have what you could call a shadow IT has grown up here, but there's cases where we are doing, development within the business, either building a product line that's based on technology or applying technology to, say, out in the digital oil field. Is that really traditional IT's role? I don't know. I'd say that these folks built up the technology and technical disciplines that they really needed to have to do what was right for the business. I'm not one to stop that or squelch that. I really think as a digital officer, I'm here to enable that and make it better. So if they're using AWS or Azure, doesn't matter, pick one. Are they really leveraging the strength of those relationships and plugging into the oil and gas vertical industry investments that those suppliers are making? So that's where I can tease out where the activity is going on in the business and shine a light on it and say, here, let me help you. Let me make this even more than what you're bringing to the table. Do you even know there's this richness out there in the IT community that can help you move forward?
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. You've spoken about the importance of culture in any business, and especially in the early days, getting to know the cultural attributes, what makes a certain organization special, what makes it tick, and finding the way in which you kind of align and help amplify the good in that. Can you talk a bit about the culture here, what you found as you got to know what makes this organization tick?
Sure. So if you look at some of our core values, respect for the individual, humility, community-centric, teamwork, innovation, communication. I'm missing one, forgive me. But they're very, very personal, and the family lives by these values. What I found in some of the public companies that I've worked for in the past is the values weren't as personal to everyone. So when I think about respect for the individual, when I look at making organizational changes and what chief X officer doesn't make some organizational changes as they adapt their new role, I had to plan very carefully who had inputs and who felt they had inputs. I think I probably ran my plan by 20 peers over the course of 6 weeks before I rolled it out. I actually came to my conclusions fairly early on in the role, what I felt I needed to do, but I knew it was not the right time to just roll it out immediately. So it's that collaborative aspect. Also in terms of what I did with titles and what the communication plan was and the rollout plan, probably put 10 times more effort into that than I might have done at other organizations, which you can just roll it out and respond and people run with it because it's a different kind of organization. So even when it comes down to language choice. So one of the things that I've done is whenever we send out IT announcements, and you know you need to, how many times do you get an email that says this system's going down, or you know, this iOS upgrade is going to break your email if you do it? So you know, we get those all the time, but really changing the language in there so why should the user care? And bringing a more individual, personalized touch to everything that we send out. So the IT brand can be, in a lot of organizations, the world of no. I didn't want to be the island of no. Mm-hmm. So and pacing of change, I also had to adapt with the culture. If I rolled out major new digital initiatives early on, I didn't think it would fly. But bringing the little wins and then publicizing the heck out of those little wins, it got people's attention and they were things they really cared about. So, it's the little annoyances when you get rid of those or address those that really ease the way going forward. So I had to think very carefully about what were the little changes I could change and should change, and what were the little changes I shouldn't change. Just give you an example. Conference rooms are not all available online today to reserve. I'm used to that at every company I've been to, right? Mm-hmm. But there were some cultural reasons why they weren't. So understanding that and staying away from it until it's the right time to address it is one of those.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, as you've been an IT executive long enough and led multiple transformations of organizations, I'll speak very generally, but going from kind of the typical order-taking IT function to a value-creating function, a strategic function. And now, especially with the augmented responsibilities and new aspect of your title, that much more of a declaration of the need to drive a new kind of value. As you think about the skills that you are adding to the team or growing of the existing team, can you talk a bit about the differences today versus the past? What skills are growing in importance? What are you training for to make sure that you are having the necessary skills to deliver all that you've just described?
Right. No, it's a great question. So when I think about the business-facing skills, because I do think there's a couple of different buckets within IT, and we all have aptitudes that might have a shift left or shift right in there. I'm really looking for somebody that understands how to learn a business, can understand how to collaborate, can speak in terms of business outcomes, can talk in terms of business risk. So it's really that business generalist that then knows how to translate back into technology and make sure that the IT services are procured, gathered, whatever verb you want to use to deliver to the business. So it's really looking for those folks that are adaptable, eager, proactive, and self-aware. So that I think defines the bulk of the business facing side. Of course, there's other things that are just table stakes, right? You have to be able to manage budgets. You have to be able to manage projects and tasks and be a leader. So that's given. When it comes to the technology side, it changes all the time, right? Who knew what a cloud engineer was 5 years ago? Where could you find one? Who knew what a mobile developer was 10 years ago? Because the technology changes so fast, I really just want an agile learner. So not afraid of technology. They need the self-awareness, but a little bit different side of the self-awareness is on the technology self-awareness. Say, I recognize that Python is ramping up in the trends and I don't know anything about it, so I should.
Mm, that's interesting. I also wanted to ask you, Diane, you lead and have led a function that is notorious for a lack of diversity, especially gender diversity. So you've successfully navigated your way to the top of the IT function, as I say, a function that has historically been overrepresented by men relative to women. And I wonder if you could take a moment to reflect upon your rise and some of the difference makers in your life. And I'm curious the extent to which you have thoughts on how organizations can have a better diversity to the mix, especially the gender mix.
Sure. I felt I was almost a bit gender blind at some point in my rise through my career. And I don't know if it was because I was so career aspirational, I was just going to get there no matter what. But when I talk to a number of my my peers, female peers from an age perspective, I think we did put on that mantle back in the day to say, we're just going to muscle through this. And maybe we put on more male characteristics earlier on in our careers to just move through, and then it became part of our personas and maybe didn't balance out as much of our true characters we should have. I see that the next generation operates differently as they should, and that we have the absolute, necessity that we have to foster that, not in just terms of gender diversity, but all kinds of, I really think diversity of thought is what we all need to strive for. But when you look at the next generation and the one behind that, there's just still not enough going in. So I really look at what can I do from a STEM perspective back in the elementary schools. Elementary and middle schools is where we need to go, because if I look at who's going to be in the leadership seat 50 years from now, we really have to focus on those investments. So I think almost every diverse peer that I have is also focused on STEM initiatives in their community in any way. I think it's just a recognition that if we don't do this, the cycle's not going to change. I actually heard, I can't quote the source, they said that the prediction now is that we won't have equality of 50-50 of men and women in senior leadership roles for 100 years. I thought that was mind-boggling. Of course, I can't cite the source. So where's the credibility in that? But that certainly to me was a wake-up call that we need to really think differently about our approach in every time we make a talent decision.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I wanted to also ask you a bit about trends that are on the rise from your perspective. As you look forward and you contemplate different technology trends or process or people trends for that matter that are particularly exciting you to the point of investigating it personally or professionally or investing in it as the case may be, what are some examples of those that are on the rise in your mind?
It just seems data. and all things that spawn from that. So yes, we've been talking about IoT in the past few years, and we talk about data science, but it's really, how is this exposure to data and the analytical tools and making it so that you can have a citizen data scientist enabling them, how is that going to change the workforce of the future? And that is something that I'm talking about with our leadership. It's not just about RPA and eliminating keystrokes, but what are the work habits going to be like 20 years from now? If we really can unleash the power of this data and have the easy part of the analytics done for you, call that AI if you want, and then we're augmenting our brains with those kinds of tools, will it really change our creativity and what we can focus on? Or are we still going to be trapped in email and meetings 15 years from now? I hope not, but that's really where, as the Pollyanna in me, I think that data and all that unleashes really can transform the workforce the same way, in a better way than how emails and meetings transformed us back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm.
So the promise of technology making us more productive and ensuring that as we are working, the things we're working on are to the highest level of value.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that we'll all be working at the PhD level rather than the stenographer level.
I like that. Well, Diane Schwartz, thank you so much for joining us today, sharing your perspectives on your career journey, your time so far at Hunt Consolidated, and a bit of where the future might take us. It's been a great conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks as always.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Paola Arbour, the Chief Information Officer of Tenet Healthcare.